a pretty ambitious agenda, so I'm going to give you just a few examples from work that I have done and my colleagues have done that can help you to kind of think about how you might be able to be creative with the data that you're already collecting and thinking about applying machine learning. And then my colleague is going to talk about some practical solutions of how you might start to get started with Azure ML. Okay, so why should you care, though, about any of the things that we're talking about, in addition to the fact that it's just exciting that we can apply these models, right, to data? Well, basically, these models touch every aspect of our lives, right? So from the music that we listen to the books we read, to the media we follow, maybe even to the next election here, right? And so just like companies are sort of using our data to make predictions about us, you can begin to think about how to use that data to make predictions about yourself. So I'm going to tell you about a few examples where I think we were quite clever with how we used our own data. So we started with business problems that people cared about, for instance, in marketing and fraud detection, and got a little creative with how we used our data. So the first example is a data problem where we were trying to target market a telephone service to customers. And by the way, this has been a problem for telecom for many, many years, right? They want to get new customers. Every telecom company wants to get new customers. So how do they typically predict these things? Well, they take your demographics, they see how much you've spent in the past, they will maybe in the US have a credit score on you, right? And so they make predictions about you based on your characteristics and how you have interacted with the company in the past. So what we did for a particular telecom company is we added to what was typically done information about a user's social network. So the bread and butter of the company has always been these interactions between consumers. They could see who calls who, right? And they can see of those people that are calling who bought particular products. So we did one simple thing. We made a list of people that were connected to existing customers, and we then targeted those people, right? So assuming that people that are connected to people that have already bought our products are similar in ways that would be useful for the company. And it turns out that the social network-based marketing, after we did this, became a new trend, right? So now companies target people when they have social network data based on people's social network, okay? And in this particular context, people were 5 times more likely to purchase the product if they were connected to an existing customer, okay? So we use data that they've had for ages in a creative way. So an old problem, use their existing data, but we had to be creative about how we use the data. Similar context, telecom company again, this time for risk. Okay, so here, the telecom company had a problem called subscription fraud, where people sign up for phone service, they get their phone turned off, and then they sign up under their mother's name or a friend's name, right? And so the way that they would try to catch fraud in the past is based on looking at, do the names look similar, do the addresses look similar? So again, we added social network features, and we found that people are who they call. So think about that for a second. Think about all the people that you call, your mom, your family, your friends. Can you think of anybody that would call exactly those same people? No? Right? So you have a social network signature that's revealed in the people you call. So we use that to connect fraudulent people. So this person over here that's connected to two people then, you know, perturbed herself, right? Tried to hide her identity, and we could connect her through the people that she called. We had a 95% match rate in that example. In the customer channel, I spend a lot of time looking at how people respond to advertising using our own internal Microsoft data. So looking at how people search after a TV ad is shown and how people click on the web. So in this case, people have historically measured the effectiveness of TV advertising using survey data, okay? So what happens is a company like Microsoft will pay another company a lot of money to survey people like you and ask you, how do you feel about our products? Are you likely to buy them? Would you recommend them to a friend? Okay, and so now we're utilizing our own data to see whether we can measure advertising effectiveness in a different way. An advertisement is shown, do people search more? Do they click on the web? Do they buy something right after that? So again, using this data to be a little bit more creative, linking a TV ad to search and then their behavior after that, which is what the picture shows. We find that using this data, we not only can see that there's a spike after a TV ad is shown, which is what this graph is showing on the horizontal axis is the minutes after an ad versus the minutes before, and we see the upper side is mobile versus desktop. The response to this TV ad is happening primarily on mobile phone. So people are sitting in front of their computer and responding on their mobile phones, okay, in the 1 to 2 minutes after a TV ad. We can only see this with our data. So another example I want to point out is something that my colleagues work a lot on now in our research lab. And they're utilizing Office 365 data at Microsoft to try to understand productivity and our workforce better. So this is what, if we plotted the Microsoft org chart, this is what our organization looks like, where the little red dots are people and the connections, basically are connections to managers and the through the entire org. So what you see is you have these siloed groups. It kind of looks like a brain, right? Like the brain of Microsoft. And it looks like they wouldn't talk to each other. But if you look at the email data, what actually happens is the organization looks like this, right? Where between these different groups, you actually see a lot of different connections. And so what my colleagues have done, they've taken this data and created features for users. So how many people are you connected to? How fast do you respond to email? And see whether that is predictive of their satisfaction in the company. So things that they were able to uncover are email response time between a manager and direct reports impacts the satisfaction with a manager. So the longer it takes for a manager to respond to email, the least satisfied people are. The size of the manager's email network, the smaller the size, the less satisfied people are. Okay? And so the point of this example and the examples before it is that these data have existed for a long time. And it not only required having these problems that the companies have had for a long time, target marketing, fraud detection, trying to understand if customers are satisfied, but it also required that people analyzing the data thought a little bit about the data and tried to act creatively, right? So let's take this to the African context. These are examples that we've worked on for American companies. So I would argue that today there's very little difference between what can be done in the US and what can be done in the African context, right? So think about the examples that I just showed you. There's telecom data in the African context, there's email data in the African context. These data more or less are the same and can be used creatively to make predictions about individuals, okay? And these data can also be used to just derive insights in general. So there are some examples, though, that we just pulled out, and I want to go through them rather quickly just to sort of make the point that these data now are everywhere. So one example is with the city of Cape Town. So we have a problem, a startup there that we supported called Where Is My Transport? It's sponsored by Microsoft. There's a Windows 8 app that provided transit information about where people were traveling throughout the city. And we were able to predict movement throughout the city. Mkopa is another special partner of ours, and you've heard about them, I think, many times throughout the talks during this conference. So just in case you don't remember, Mkopa Solar provides power to 400,000 homes in Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. They use Internet of Things to store and manage device data, and they build machine learning models using our Cortana suite to predict customer satisfaction. And another example is one from a company called Kafia. So my colleague or good friend, Miriam Syed, is in the audience, and she generously donated us data for this project because we wanted to see whether, again, we could continue to apply these methods in the African context. So this company is a digital service provider leveraging innovative technology to enable and provide electronic branchless banking and mobile money. So basically, they have payment locations in Addis Ababa where people can come and pay their utility bills. So they can pay 4 different utility bills. And I chatted with her before this talk, and so she's sitting on a lot of data, basically, right? So she has all these transactions from her customers paying their bills. And I asked her sort of, what are your problems, right? So again, going back to the first slide, think about your problems, right? So one of the problems she mentioned is that they want to predict demand in these locations. So there are times throughout the day when they have heavy demand and long lines, and then other times when they don't have as much demand. So I just want to leave you with this slide to tell you that just like that demand prediction example, there are many examples that if you're starting for the very first time thinking about applying machine learning in your context, they're kind of off-the-shelf standard examples for a lot of problems that you probably would face in your org. So things like customer acquisition, cross-selling, fraud detection, and so on, ranging from sales and marketing to operations and workforce. So if you don't know where to start, you can look to what people have done in all of these examples in the past and start with those features. Okay? And then try to predict the types of things that you care about. Okay? And then once you do that well, you can begin to add some of the creative features that I mentioned, right? And again, this took, you know, teams of people brainstorming about what makes sense. How can we get creative with the data that we have to make better predictions beyond what the standard is? So with that, I'm going to hand over the mic to my colleague Val. And he's going to go into a little bit more detail about our solutions.
One thing we did is we ran a lot of controlled experiments to learn from our customers, to learn what they're searching for, how they actually search, right? And we learned so much that we built a large-scale platform at the back end so that today we run not just a few experiments, but literally tens and thousands of controlled experiments every year. As a result, we've doubled our market share since then. We've more than doubled our market share for Bing. Second example, Xbox. So we use machine learning in Xbox for speech recognition and also for gesture recognition. So that when you play a game of tennis, for instance, right, there's an ML algorithm that tracks your movements. And it's saying, look, is he moving his arm or his leg? Is he moving his arm forward, backward, or sideways, right? That's all powered by machine learning. Skype Translator, that's a brilliant application of machine learning because Skype Translator actually uses the cutting edge of AI. It uses a category of algorithms called deep learning. You might have heard of deep learning, deep neural networks, and they're very, very powerful for speech recognition and translation. So I've talked about how we use ML in our products. How can you use ML to actually get value from your data? So at Microsoft, we offer ML in many different flavors, but our flagship is Cortana Intelligence, which runs in the cloud. We also have very, very strong support for R and Python, because these are the two dominant languages in machine learning today, right? In terms of R, we give you R in multiple places. You can bring R and Python into Azure Machine Learning. You can run it deep in the database because SQL Server 2016 now has an R engine running in the database, so that you can build predictive models and score millions of customers without moving a single row of data outside the data. That's extremely powerful because that's one of the new paradigms we see in big data, where you bring the compute to data, not the other way around. We also give you R as a scale-out solution in Microsoft R Server. You see, you can run your R job in parallel across multiple servers on a Hadoop cluster at the same time. Speed, speed, speed. So let's talk a little bit about Cortana Intelligence, which is our cloud-based product, right? Why is this so useful for you? We could talk about this for the whole day, but three key reasons I want to talk about is, one, cost, right? One of the key benefits of any cloud environment is low cost, right? And so, with Cortana Intelligence, You can run pretty large jobs now, large or small jobs, all in the cloud. Basically, base your renting compute and world-class machine learning algorithms, right? Which is one of the reasons why machine learning is now much more affordable, right? Anyone now, from a single developer to a large enterprise, can do machine learning. 20 years ago when I did my PhD, that was not possible, because the only way to use these algorithms was to buy very, very expensive servers. The second thing you get from Cortana Intelligence is scale, because of course you're using the full benefit, the full scale and elasticity of Azure, right? So you can ramp up or down based on demand. And then one big benefit I hope you got from Ranga's session is support for all types of data. And you get this as well from Cortana Intelligence, because we support structured data or unstructured data, small or large data sets. Just want to quickly show you this slide again you saw in Ranga's session, because it really summarizes what you get from Cortana Intelligence. We offer you 5 layers of world-class ML capability. In the information management layer, we ingest data of all types, small, large, structured, or unstructured. And we have tools like Data Factory that will help you move that data from point to point in the cloud. Right? You don't have to reinvent the wheel. With our big data store, you can store data of any type. Structured data will go in a relational database, which is SQL Data Warehouse. Unstructured data, like all the image files, social media data, for instance, will go into a large-scale store like Data Lake Store. For machine learning, we have Azure Machine Learning that I'll show you in a minute, but we also support other types, like streaming analytics. For real-time analytics, we have Spark. You can run your machine learning jobs on Spark in a scale-out environment, and we actually use all of these tools in my team. Then for visualization, I'll show you Power BI, which is the world's favorite BI tool. And I hope you saw from very practical examples in Ranga's keynote how we're now bringing a new wave of perceptive intelligence to your own apps, right? So the first one is Bot Framework. This is really leading edge technology coming out of Microsoft Research, right? We give you bot frameworks through APIs that empowers you now to build very, very powerful interactive apps, right? So you can interact with your customers wherever they are very easily. Next is cognitive services, another world-class suite of technologies from Microsoft Research, right? Because back in the day, like I actually did my PhD in vision. I applied AI to vision. But 20 years ago, I had to write all the AI algorithms and neural networks by hand in C++, right? Today, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to sweat it. Because with cognitive services from Cortana Intelligence, you can just call APIs for vision, speech, language, or even search, right? We have this thing called the face API that you can call to do face detection, right? You can do face recognition automatically. We also have APIs for speech that you can use for speech recognition, just like you get from Cortana or Siri or Google Now. And then, of course, we also expose a lot of the Bing APIs to you, right? So together, Cognitive Services offers you pretty world-class technologies for vision, speech, and even language, on natural language understanding through simple API calls. I can't tell you how powerful that is, because when I say it's world-class, I'm not exaggerating, because most of these algorithms are actually powered by leading-edge AI technologies, especially deep learning, right? So next, I'm going to show you a simple demo, just to show you how you too can actually take advantage of Cortana Intelligence, right, to build your own apps. And for this demo, imagine for a minute that I'm a bank manager. The problem we have is we launched a new credit application in four East African markets. And the good problem we have is demand was too high. We have too many people applying for it to the point where our loan managers, our credit officers are overwhelmed. So I want to use machine learning to automate the loan approval process, right? So I'll start with this data set. It's a simple data set we collected from previous loans. So, I didn't realize you can't see. Just 1 minute. Okay. So let me show you what the data set looks like. It's a really simple data set with these variables. We have credit worthiness, that's the output, right? So it tells me for each customer, did they pay up or did they default? It has things like the type of apartment, number of credits with this bank. Let me go back to some more familiar ones. Account balance, how much is your account balance per month, what's the duration of the loan, etc. Did you pay up your previous loans? Yes or no? So I would take that data and import it into Azure Machine Learning. So this is Azure Machine Learning Studio, which is a very powerful machine learning platform. One of the best things about Azure Machine Learning is simplicity. Everything about this is designed for simplicity, right? And it's intentional. You can do everything in Azure Machine Learning from a simple browser. You don't have to install anything at all on your machine, right? And then the second thing is, as you can see from this experiment, you know, you can do a lot. You can build pretty powerful models with nothing but lines and boxes, right? If you want, you can do your own programming to customize it. And this is where you bring in your own R code, your Python code, and you can combine it with Azure Machine Learning, right? This is pretty powerful. So here's a real model I built last week to solve this problem. How do I use that data to predict which customer will default on their loan? It looks a bit messy, but all I'm doing is I pre-process the data, and then I use two algorithms to do the prediction. One is logistic regression. The second one is boosted decision trees, which is a type of ensemble model. But Azure Machine Learning hides a lot of complexity from you, because behind the scenes, you know, you can choose from a range of really powerful machine learning algorithms. You know, you can use neural networks, support vector machines, decision jungles, random forests, it's all there, right? I mean, this is a huge value add, because 10 or 20 years ago, none of this was available in the public domain, right? You had to either write it yourself or pay a lot of money for it. Okay, the second thing about Azure Machine Learning is ease of deployment. Because building your machine learning model is hard enough, but typically it takes time and a lot of coding to deploy it in production, right? In Azure Machine Learning, we've made it so easy that you can deploy a model now in under 10 minutes with no coding. So let's, can you put on the mic, please? In this case, I've already run the model. Next step is you can go ahead and prepare it for deployment. I already deployed before. So all I'll do now is just to update this experiment. And when it's done, we'll see what the final model looks like. Okay, so it's done. So this is the model it deployed in production with the inputs and the outputs. So next, I'll run this. And you can see everything is done with a simple click. I'm not doing any coding to deploy this, right? Which is extremely powerful. And when it's done, we'll go ahead and deploy the model. But actually, yeah, so I already deployed one. I can do it again just to show you how you would do it. And while it's loading, I'll just show you the one I deployed earlier.
So when it deploys, it shows you a dashboard like this. This is a dashboard you can use to monitor the performance of your model. You can see how many people are using it, how much compute it's consuming, etc. So you can test the model. So these are all the inputs for one customer. If I hit test, it scores this customer and says, hey, the customer has a 0.367 probability of defaulting. So it's a good customer, right? I would give him the loan. All right, what about a different customer? If I changed the term of the loan to 60 months and increased the credit amount to 6,000, which is 6 million shillings, you can test the model. You make sure it's actually working in production. How do you actually use it? But one thing that's really cool about it is we deploy it as a simple web API, right? So you can call it using simple HTTPS, right? So we have two ways. You can call it interactively using this API here, and you see it's a simple HTTPS request, or you can score it in batch using this one. I mean, we go even further. See, down here, we give you sample code in C#, Python, Python 3+, and R. So that's the code you can use to call your model through this API. And the only thing you change in this code is the key, right? You tell it your primary key and your secondary key for security, right? So what about business people who can't use the API? For business people, you can use Excel, right? I can share the results of this model with my manager, all in Excel. So how do we do that? If I just open that, it'll take a few seconds. So it opens up a blank Excel sheet. The first thing I need to do is to enable it. What it's doing now first is it's installing and adding to call this model. So that's a credit risk predictor I built. Next, I'll go ahead and copy some data. Let me pull some data from the test set, and I'll just dump it here. So this is a data set I'll use to test the model with. So I'll just tell it where the data lives, so it'll select the data I have chosen there, and then I'll tell it write everything from column V1. And with that, if I hit auto predict, see, in real time, it's actually scored all of these examples. And just to show you I'm not playing games, that's the result. So these are the inputs. And then at the end, we have this new column called scored probabilities. So it scored each customer and given them the probability of default. All right, so how do we visualize this? Let's try Power BI. So in Power BI, I can load that data set. I actually did that earlier. And the data set lives down at the bottom, if we can. Sorry, I just scroll down to the bottom. I have too much here. So that's the data set I loaded earlier. And then I use that data to build a dashboard, right? So we have a couple of things here. The first one just compares the actual creditworthiness versus the predicted scores. And you find they're very close for all four cities. Next one shows me the purpose of the loan. What does this mean? So the way we coded the data, if you're taking the loan to buy, you know, cars or furniture, that's not very good purpose. You get a low score, right? But if you're using it for good purposes, like to set up a business or pay school fees, that's good. So what it says is Nairobi, Mombasa, and Kampala here have the highest scores in terms of purpose. And if we look at the value of savings of the customers applying, the same three cities show up. Another variable we track is what's the most valuable asset you have, right, for each person applying. And again, those in Nairobi, Mombasa, and Kampala score highest. So this is a chart I built manually, right, using that data. But I want to show you something really cool from Power BI, because Power BI can find insights automatically from your data set, right? So I thought, okay, just for fun. Let me do the quick insights and see what it finds. So if I highlight that data set, view insights, you see it shows me insights that Power BI found automatically from this data set. So let's see, what did it find? Amuse me, Power BI. So the first thing is it's looking at the purpose by city, right? So for six-month loans, it says Nairobi has the majority of purpose, which means Nairobi, the customers applying for credit from Nairobi are using it for good purposes, like education, businesses, etc. However, for three-year loans, for the 36-month loans, Kampala actually topped the list, right? It just found that naturally from the data. Then the other thing is account balance. You see, it says Nairobi and Mombasa have noticeably more account balance, so they basically have deeper pockets. And notice one thing, it finds a high correlation between account balance and payment status of previous loans, which basically says, in simple terms, customers with a lot of money in their bank accounts are very good at paying up credit, so they're less likely to default. So let me just show you one more thing. So now we've built this cool report, you know, we found, sorry, if I could just go back up. So here we found the predictive model is very good at predicting the risk of default, and we also found that, you know, we have to target three cities which focus on these top three, Nairobi, Mombasa, and Kampala. How do I share this with my colleagues? The first way is through a Power BI dashboard, as you saw earlier. But even easier for someone who doesn't do BI, or someone who doesn't want to go to a different tool for a report, we can use PowerPoint, okay? So if I just click that option, you see it's actually exporting this same report now into PowerPoint. And when it's done, see, if I just click save, open, voila. So that's a report it generated automatically, and we can see the timestamp right now, right? And so it's the same report with the same charts. So I can share this now with my manager, who will hopefully make better decisions about how they actually automate the approval process, who they target in terms of cities, and hopefully, by the end of the year, I hope I'll get that promotion. All right, thank you very much for your time. We want to pause. Thank you. So we'll pause and take questions for the next 5 minutes. Chandra? Yep, yes, sir.
Thank you so much, Chandra.
Thank you.
My name is Dome. I work for an NGO. Mm-hmm. And building back into the discussions we had yesterday on Microsoft and the SDGs vision, I'm keen on any other examples you might have on application of ML in monitoring and evaluation work, by and large, because SDGs are very important, but mm-hmm. what we have currently, if you're running any development work, a program locally, a way to compare that across the SDG set goals. So I'm curious in mm-hmm. application of this in the development sector, especially INGOs.
Mm-hmm. We have now from India where we've applied AI to improve eyesight, right? I know it rolls up to one of those SDG priorities. Then another one we can do is, look, there's a lot of data we're already collecting. In fact, 6 months ago, I did a presentation in Nigeria, and I was shocked at the type of data that's available already, right? Many governments, many African governments have collected a lot of data on the performance of their health services on all of those indexes. I was amazed how much insight I could get by just mining that data for no more than a week, right? I started to see trends. I started to see what parts of Nigeria were improving faster than others and why, right? Because the starting point for me was, child mortality. They have a lot of data on child mortality and infant mortality. And when I analyzed the data, I found child mortality was much higher in some states and regions than others. So naturally, I asked why.
Is it because of the health of the mothers? Is it because of the child factors like nutrition? And as I drilled down, I started to see some bigger trends that's driving those differences. Chandra?
Yeah, so I guess one thing I should mention, I teach a class in Addis Ababa University on applied data mining, and as part of that class, one of the things the students have to do is do a very intense data mining machine learning project. And through that project, we have been able to sort of use a lot of data in the context. One example is using satellite imagery to predict drought, for example. And others have been to sort of use data to predict road traffic accidents, which is a problem. So the key is to sort of find problems that are relevant for the context. And then to some extent, we have to be a little, it is sometimes challenging to get all of the data, but we sort of keep asking. And when the data are available, then we try to make the jump to sort of do the project. Now, on the other side, I will say there are projects that we're doing now. So I'm doing now where I'm trying to utilize our own internal search data and clicks on the web and link that to some of the characteristics of different countries that are being collected via some of these NGOs, actually. And so I think there's this huge promise, at least for me, in looking at data that has already been collected that perhaps has been quite expensive to collect through surveys, and linking that to data that we're getting through observational means, either via cell phone or search and those types of things.
Hello, my name is Benjamin. My question is, how, as we move into this machine learning, are the concerns of privacy and security being addressed about this data?
Yes, I'll be very blunt with you. Privacy and security are extra important to Microsoft and should be for any responsible vendor, right? I don't know if you attended yesterday's keynote where they actually showed, no, it wasn't in the keynote, it was in Youssef's session, Youssef Khalidi, where he talked about the cloud. He spent some time talking about privacy and security. We have invested a lot in privacy security to comply with the regulations in all the markets in which we serve, right? So that's important to machine learning, because everything I showed you here runs on top of our data platform, right? And this is important. It's one of the reasons why I feel comfortable promoting Cortana Intelligence and Azure to our customers. You know, when you use platforms like Hadoop, right, you can't expect that same level of security, right? Because it's taken time to build. But in Azure, we've had to, by necessity, invest heavily in privacy and security, because that's a very, very important requirement. The level 5 certification from the U.S. federal government, that's the highest level of security, federal security in the U.S., and we're the only cloud vendor to actually support that.
Yeah, I just want to add a little bit to that. So again, Microsoft takes privacy really seriously, and you might have also seen recently that we announced that we're going to allow people to actually set their privacy settings, which puts a huge burden on the company to make sure that we're able to delete everyone's data if they request that. But I also want to answer your question a little bit differently, not just from the Microsoft's perspective, but generally speaking. In my experience, the major breaches happen not because the technology isn't sufficient, but because there are weaknesses in the org with respect to people. Right? So if you don't educate your people to make sure they keep data private, for instance, don't download it on their laptop that can get stolen and run away, then you know that becomes more of a problem than sort of making sure it's housed in a place that takes security very seriously.
Okay. Do we have time for one more question?
Now, banking regulation, especially here in Africa, means like data has to be stored mostly in country. Mm-hmm. So cloud is always out for that kind mm-hmm. of thing. So mm-hmm. my question is about actually machine learning, Cortana AI, and Azure Stack. Will machine learning be part of Azure Stack?
I don't have the answer yet, because that's part of a roadmap and I'm not privy to it. But as you heard from, I think, Youssef's session yesterday,
One of the things that makes Azure unique in terms of a cloud platform is that we're the only vendor that supports a true hybrid solution, right? So if you're comfortable moving your data to a public cloud, we support that. If you want to put some of your sensitive data on premises, we also support that, right? You can actually have it in your own local data center or in a data center close to you, right? In terms of machine learning, we support the hybrid approach as well. So you can do machine learning in a public cloud through Azure Machine Learning, as I just showed you. But we also support other delivery modes. The one I didn't show you is machine learning in the database, right? In SQL Server 2016, we actually shipped for the first time an R server deep in the database engine. So if you're operating in a highly regulated environment like that, where you can't move data to the cloud, then you know you can store that data in SQL Server 2016 and analyze it. In that case, you're doing all the machine learning within the database itself. You don't have to move any data out of your data center. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks.